All right, so here we are. Welcome back to the Sports Medicine Broadcast. We're live with the Sports Medicine Update brought to you by Memorial Hermann's. It's day two of the afternoon interview session. We're interviewing Dr. Michael Cusick.
Yep.
Cusick. I'm sorry. I missed the
intro. It's all good.
Dr. Michael Cusick. And so we've got a couple people join us. We got Jeff and Mark. It's David and
then Fancy, yeah.
And Jeff, and then of course Jeff with extra stuff here. I'm Jeremy Jackson. We're talking about ulnar collateral ligaments. Dr. Cusick said that he was going to give us a nice dry after lunch.
Yes.
Changed up a little bit. And Jeff kind of got just pulled in here because he had a question, and so I said, "Hey, let's go have this question in the air." And so Jeff, if you don't mind, go ahead and ask your question or make your comment there for Dr. Cusick, and we'll just roll from there.
My question to Dr. Cusick was, there was a study done in the American Journal of Sports Medicine not too long ago about the amount of force in, measured in newtons across the ulnar collateral ligament based on velocity of the pitch, and not so much the type of pitch, but more of the pitch count and the force of the pitch.
Yeah, and so we were just talking, there's a great biomechanical study that really looked at that, and it was a little bit too much I think to palate for the after lunch crowd, but it really breaks down exactly those forces across the ligament based on the velocity of the pitch. And as he said, after you go over a certain newton meter threshold of force, then that's when you're likely to have these injuries. So we're getting better at understanding it and describing it in more detail. And so yeah, that's definitely – so because of that, I think I speak for most people when they say that we used to eliminate the curveball or the slider or one of those pitches for our younger athletes. Not so much – I don't tell them so much that if that's what they love to throw, if that's what they're good at. For me, it's a overall pitch count for either by unit time for the younger athletes, especially if they're having pain. I mean – you have to really be sensitive to that. You need to rest them. This is an overuse injury. So,
one of the comments you made was that Texas and Florida are at the bottom of the MLB totals because we're year round. I don't know if you said a statistic or if I just missed it.
No, that's an oversimplification, but I definitely use it in clinic to get my point across, because you certainly have, you know, people in Texas will tell me about every, and I'm aware of some very famous pitchers that have come out of this state. So it's not a rule, it's not a guarantee, but in general, those latitudes that can support all year ball, where kids just move team to team, those people that we see come in with the injury, and then you see these Midwestern states where these great pitchers come in, they're just shut down forcefully by, you know, cold weather for 3 months out of the year, whether they like to or not. So,
Dr. Andrews, well, he'll be the first to tell you that every kid should take at least 3 months off.
Yep.
And there's also another study out that shows that kids that play on multiple teams are at 29% higher rate of sustaining an injury to their elbow or their shoulder, as opposed to kids that don't.
Yeah. And we're seeing all those injuries like now in our clinic. I'm sure he sees the same. Like, they're just starting to come in. They've been at it now for a while. They're starting their second team, and they've gotten no rest. You know, we see little leaguer shoulder, we see medial elbow pain, and they don't want to quit. Obviously, they're trying to progress to the next level, and the more they play, but I have to have a pretty significant talk with the parents and try to shut it down for a little bit.
Well, it's sad to say it has to get to that point where they have to come in to get the point, to get to paint the picture for them.
Right.
Because it could have been avoided a lot sooner. So
sure.
That's kind of sad for the kid.
Sure.
Who could have been a great player maybe. You never know, but he overused it.
Yeah, you know, at least the initial studies, like I said, the cohort of the high school athletes that went on to reconstruction. And, again, it's probably more that's the – result of poor throwing mechanics and some other things, but that group didn't do as well post their UCL reconstruction as the. So if you tear your UCL and you're already a major league pitcher, as we saw in the numbers in there, there's a pretty good chance that you can come back and do pretty well. But if you start having that kind of injury at 15 years old, there's something else. So it's probably more a result of why did you come to that injury at that age, and it's throwing mechanics, it's core strength, it's starting your pitch from your feet up, because that's what you see the young high school kids, and they are just chunking that ball with all their might, and they haven't had time or maybe the proper coaching to see that, you know, that there's so much more to the pitch than just flailing your arm.
You talked about like the velocity and the number of pitches, but what about, say, not just poor mechanics, but some that have maybe a little lower of a natural arm slot when they pitch, or even going so far as a sidearm pitcher, or the extremes, the submarine pitchers, because there's some very successful ones in the major leagues that haven't ever torn their UCL that are sidearm, and they tell you that that's poor mechanics.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few exceptions to that rule that we see in the notable examples that you see in the major leagues, but I was talking to these guys that I went to a talk, and with a few exceptions aside, you can look at we were showing the windup of a number of Major League Baseball players, and you could almost pick out based on, and they've made it work obviously, but you can almost pick out the guys that were going to go on to ulnar collateral ligament reconstruction based on their starting point for their throw and their where their arm is relative to their body as they go through their acceleration phase. So there are exceptions to every rule, but by and large that is pretty predictable.
So when you're talking about taking the 3 months off, is that like don't pick up a baseball or just don't pitch?
It's high velocity throwing. Mm-hmm. So you know, just like when we rehab somebody that has, just say you have vague medial elbow pain, we're concerned about it, we're more onto it now, and we shut you down. You start with a throwing program. You know, you take some time off. You start with a short toss and then you progress on. And really, the specifics of the throwing program can vary. It's just going through those necessary steps. So yeah, you can throw. It's just repetitive high velocity overhead throwing that you need a sustained break from. If kids come in with just mild medial elbow pain and they play, because like when they're young, right? Like I see these kids
they play shortstop, they pitch.
Yeah. I'll tell them, you know, based on how bad their symptoms are, it's a little bit of a judgment call, but based on how bad their symptoms are, I'll tell them no more pitching, but you can still make infield throws, you know, or if they're like one kid played the catcher too. Right. And I was like, I really don't want you chunking that ball to second to throw that guy out that's stealing. That's essentially a pitch, you know. Mm-hmm. So I don't want that throw. So if you need to do that to catch, then you don't need to do that. But you can make regular infield throws. Mm-hmm. So.
And I think part of the off-season and conditioning thing that's lost a lot is a lot of kids don't practice a lot of long toss.
Absolutely. I'm about to ask about your outfielders. How do you feel about those guys? If you pitch, but then you go play in outfield, you play center.
Yeah, that's
something.
That's concerning too. I mean, some of those kids can't, depending on what level that they can't do that anyway. Mm-hmm. But it's still a wind up as hard as you can throw. So that's really not
the cutoff, man.
That's really not ideal
when we're
rehabbing this either. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
so that's a question there. At Pasadena High School, I wouldn't say we're very competitive in baseball. You know, some of those kids we play like fall ball and winter ball and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's not a matter of them not playing. It's just the competitiveness or the level that they're playing at. Because I haven't seen UCL injury in my school at all.
Right.
And so I'm wondering if it's because of their lack of advanced ability, to put it.
It could be. I mean, maybe you have a great off-season strength and conditioning program.
I guess.
But, yeah, I mean, and again, we talked about the correlation of velocity, of pitching velocity to the actual stress place across. So, you know, if your fastest pitcher is only pitching, you know, 75 miles an hour, then it's probably less likely that person. But I still see people with poor mechanics, with medial elbow pain, with low velocity pitching. It's just and so you still need to treat that, but maybe you've just been lucky.
So one of the big issues that you touched on is the fact that we have seen a couple of instances that they come back from their UCL tear and they can throw 2-3 miles an hour faster than they did before. Now that they've actually seen those results, do you think there's a way we can go about maybe trying to convince them that that's not a good thing in the long run? Because they're going to see that, and the ones that are really competitive, they're going to say short-term pain for long-term gain, you know, I'll throw instead of 88, 92. just by doing this.
Yeah, it's a little bit of like debunking the myth, you know, and it's the disconnect between science and like nerds mm-hmm. and athletes, you know, because they hear a success story like that but so it's difficult. That's a very difficult thing to, because a lot of people have heard that, have seen that, and that mm-hmm. spreads. And they see professionals that come back and were just as good or maybe better because and it maybe had nothing to do with their UCL reconstruction. Yeah. It just, they hit a better portion of their career, you know.
The rehab.
Yeah, so they paid more attention to detail. So it's difficult. It's hard to present, you know, here I can present information to you guys and you can digest it and understand it, but it's hard to tell athletes that. I just stress to kids, you know, that, you know, surgery's real. There's complications with surgery. Bad things can happen. I mean, I don't want to mortify kids, but you know, you just tell them that, you know, this is a real thing, and try to. And I think guys that are and what do you do exactly?
I'm athletic sorry. Trainer.
Okay, so I think guys that are working with the kids like every day are the kids that are the guys that can get in their ear and kind of tell them like, listen, you know, it's got to start there. Like mm-hmm. this, you misunderstood or mm-hmm. whatever it may be. So they're hearing that, but somebody that they trust day by day, because otherwise they're not going to listen. Mm-hmm. Like if I see them once a year right. or less, you know.
Yeah.
So
that's tough.
Do you talk to kids about that? I haven't had too many discussions like about kids saying, well, I heard I can come back stronger if I get this done.
No, it's, you know, doing the surgery is not going to make you necessarily pitch faster. We are reconstructing a ligament that's been, incompetent. Usually these are long-term injuries. The kid, you know, one of the symptoms of having a torn UCL is the decrease in the velocity. So a lot of times that's...
They decrease their velocity because they're in pain.
Correct, exactly.
Mm-hmm. And they don't look at that.
Exactly, right. So once you take away that pain and once, you know, you do a proper rehab, that's why they're pitching again to their max.
It's kind of like forced rehab. Mm-hmm. Now, you had a mm-hmm. surgery, but imagine, you know, it's kind of like shutting somebody down for
exactly.
a year
yeah.
from pitching.
Right.
So they feel better.
Right.
It's difficult to tell kids that, especially if they've heard that. So, you know, like I said, Andrews' group tried to put that out there and tried to educate, at least from the scientific community, that, hey, even though we do a large number of these things, that's not the way to think about this, you know?
Mm-hmm. I don't know if you guys have seen this on your smartphone apps, but Dr. Andrews actually has an app out there. It was mm-hmm. developed by he and Kevin Wilk. It's called Throw Like a Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And I coach my son's high school or summer league baseball team, and I have parents whose kids play on multiple teams. I'm like, you know, this is something that you would be worthwhile in picking up and putting on your phone, because it talks about stretching,
right,
preseason, off season, all that, all types of conditioning and exercises, things like that. Hey, it's very good. It's got a pitch counter on it. And
yeah, do you
recommendations
guys,
and everything like that.
Do the athletic train? I mean, I'm just asking. Do you guys have like pitch count stuff in the? I mean, is that readily available for the kids to see or?
In season, yeah, but when they go off and do their, you know,
their,
summer ball, we
do
have
their thing.
Yeah, we have absolutely no. So sometimes they come back in the, you know, and they also play football, and they come back and boom, their elbow's already hurting. Well, what'd you do all summer? Well, I played baseball.
Right.
But season ended a while ago. No summer ball.
Yeah, summer ball.
Okay, well then.
How active are you guys in trying to correct, you know, proper mechanics? Are you looking at, are you breaking down each phase of pitching? Because we know that, you know, it's a late acceleration mm-hmm. and early deceleration. That's where you really get a lot of force in the MCL.
I try MCL. And help out a little. I mean, I'm kind of in the same boat as Pasadena over there. We don't exactly have the most talented of, you know, athletes on our baseball team right now. So.
Right.
You know, their pitching's just kind of all over the place, and it'll be like, we don't really have a pitcher for this game, so you at third base, come try your hand at pitching, because mm-hmm. we don't have the numbers either. Mm-hmm. But I try and correct some things, like, you know, I can tell when there are steps going off to the far right, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's putting this extra, you know, problem with their arm coming across their body, and I can fix that. And but for the most part, we do what we can.
I'd say at Pasadena, I'm not in any way involved correcting those, partly because like it's they're out at the baseball field. You'd have to go out there during practice, but then there's also softball and soccer and everything else going on.
Yeah, I only do that when I'm like at a game and see it.
And then at the games, we split on between the districts. I honestly only covered like five varsity baseball games because
mm-hmm.
I was either at soccer or softball or or whatever else, or sub-varsity baseball was going on. And so I would say that's one thing I'm working on, mm-hmm. is trying to be more proactive in preventing. It's just something mm-hmm. that I'm not, have not done a good job of, and have not been well trained in. So yeah. Something we're working towards.
I don't work at a high school, but like I said, I coach my son's right. summer league team, and I keep a pitch count on every kid that goes to the mound. Mm-hmm. Every kid, I don't care if he's going to go pitch one pitch or if he's going to throw four or five innings. I keep a pitch count on everybody. My son and some of his friends all even film them with my iPhone.
Mm-hmm. So look
break
at their
them down.
That's good.
Okay. Yeah. And also, I'm kind of fortunate enough to have a friend of mine who's a major league scout that I used to work for when he was a junior college baseball coach. And I can always send him a video, you know, and he can, you know, shoot me back a text or an email or something like that on, you know, things that he sees that might help in preventing types of injuries.
So. Yeah.
That's good. A great idea.
That's, yeah.
It's really mm-hmm. important. Anybody that has UCL symptoms should get evaluated in their pitching mechanics.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Earlier they mentioned Coach Eye or something like that. An app. Have you ever heard of that?
No.
Video
yeah, no.
Okay. Well, I don't use it either, so somebody had said it earlier. I can't remember who. Okay, so what else you got on UCL?
Oh, I think what – do we already talk about PRP? So I said, I don't use – you know, PRP, I don't know of any studies that have conclusively proven that PRP is effective in treating. Certainly not rupture, complete rupture, but not even really at intermediate phases. And we talked about this a little bit beforehand, so you can chime in. But I don't use that for this, so I don't really. I also don't do steroid injections, not that anyone asked, but I don't do that for obvious reasons. I think most people don't do that. Some concern for weakening the ligament. So mm-hmm. it's an overuse injury. It needs to be rested. There are no quick fixes, unfortunately, that we can get people skipped ahead or through that period of time. So we just have to, unfortunately, just educate our pitchers and kind of shut them down, you know.
No, I mean, you know, with PRP in that area, you know, it's kind of one of the more risky areas just because you do have that ulnar nerve sitting just, you know, just posterior to it. You know, in a complete rupture of the UCL, I wouldn't see any purpose yeah. of PRP. I guess if the decision came down to, you know, if you do surgery, obviously you're lost for the season. I guess I would consider it in, you know, in an MRI-proven partial type tear. I probably don't have too much to lose, you know, if you're going to lose the season anyway. But again, the main thing is not really the injection, it would be the rest. So
I have a question for Dr. Kusick. When you do an ulnar collateral reconstruction, do you use the remaining ligament fibers that are left in there for vascularization supply?
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a good question. So much like the group that I presented their study today, I repair any and all remaining tissue that's there. Hence the another part of the myth that we actually make it stronger mm-hmm. because, you know, we keep the tissue there and try to repair and whip stitch the remaining tissue in addition to our reconstructed autograft tendon. So yeah, I keep all that tissue that I can. I use that docking technique on the distal humeral side, and then bone tunnels on the ulnar side. So it's kind of that's a modified technique from what Job did, which is, you know, the most popularized technique of.
So really, when you get into your surgical procedure, it's kind of like the myth of the ACL. When you take an ACL out, you're four times more likely to tear the opposite side because when you put a patellar tendon graft in there, most of the time it's a thicker graft than what your previous ACL is. So when you interweave your remnants of your ulnar collateral in with your tissue graft, you've actually created a thicker ligament in there.
Right, yeah, you exactly.
So it should get stronger.
Exactly. And I don't routinely, as a matter of fact, always transpose my ulnar nerve. I don't know if you do that. I know that that group does that. That's fine. That's one way to do it. But I sort of evaluate that on a case by case basis and whether they had ulnar nerve symptoms, because like it was only about a quarter of people do. So.
All right. So the number one thing, ulnar collateral ligament, the rest, don't play year round.
That's right.
So and then the 3 months, these include not high velocity pitching. I think you guys kind of talked about it, but you know, like at the sophomore JV level, we had a kid that would play pitcher and then catcher. And so, I mean, he's like been pitching every single game almost because –
Yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot.
Well, you look at the baseball field, the only guy that throws the ball more than a pitcher does is the catcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, that's a tough and we talked about that with people playing combination positions. So I had a kid that just came in like that, and he had both little leaguer shoulder or some irritation of the growth plate at the shoulder, and he was having medial elbow pain because he was alternating between he was their best pitcher and then he would I think he's 15 maybe younger, but he was their best pitcher and also their best catcher, so I had to tell him, like, basically, and he played like multiple other infield positions, so I told him, like, I think you need to be out of pitching and catching. You can play short, even though short makes long throws too.
I'd probably stick away from third base.
Play first
too.
Base.
Yeah, so you can play, you know, but I, you know, the kid was just begging me, so I was like, all right, no pitching, no pitching, no catching, and then you can pick an infield position and see how that does. If you don't, you know, if you don't experience pain when you're making those throws, then it's probably okay to keep doing that. But, you know.
Play.
You know, we don't do, I mean, separate from this talk, but, you know, we don't do UCL reconstructions and obviously people that aren't high velocity overhead throwers. You know, if I see people, because I see a lot of old folks in my practice, if you dislocate your elbow and you completely tear your medial and collateral ligament, it's just like an MCL sprain to the knee. You're not going to get surgery for that. You know, you're just going to get rehabbed. And unless you're really putting those forces that we talked about in those positions, you really don't need that ligament.
Would you tie it into like a volleyball player maybe? Have you seen
so the small percentage at least in that large study was some
tennis players.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's you need to be aware of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You need to be aware of those sports.
And that's probably more the non-surgical type of kids probably.
It could be. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, the other thing to think about is just, you know, level and aptitude, and that's a mm-hmm. hard discussion sometimes to have with high school parents, you know, dads that are sure that their, you know, 5'8" son is going to go play in the major leagues mm-hmm. because he's a good pitcher. And it's a difficult discussion to have because that's probably not realistic, you mm-hmm. know. And so you're already having MUCL pain. And I've seen people that train me have to have this talk with parents and kind of a reality check, you know. And it's not to be negative, but it's just that you're now having evidence of throwing mechanic problems. You know, you know, there's not a lot of pitchers in the league that are under 6 foot. And so you have to, because you don't want to put a kid through a surgery like that if in reality senior year is probably it, exactly. You know. Mm-hmm. So that's a different sort of management discussion, but, you know, you have to think about that, putting people through unnecessary
different
surgery.
Angles, you got to.
Yeah.
All right, so Dr. Abbasi, tell me some tips for evaluating some things that I need to look for in my athletic training room before I send them to you guys.
So, you know, someone with a UCL injury is going to have, you probably notice a noticeable, you know, decrease in velocity. They'll have medial-sided elbow pain. Again, we were kind of talking earlier, you can try the physical exam maneuvers like the milking maneuver. You can try a valgus stress. But it's very difficult to, you know, assess an elbow instability because it's extremely subtle, you know, because mm-hmm. you have other muscles that compensate and other tendons that kind of act and do the same purpose. So
they might fatigue
like
earlier. Even if they are, you know, able to keep up their velocity because their muscular stabilizers are acting when their ligament's mm-hmm. not helping them.
But really the main thing is going to be, you know, medial-sided elbow pain that does not get better. You know, you obviously want to try to rest them first, but if it's not getting better, then it's probably time to get evaluated. And then we'll look at them. We'll get, you know, standard x-rays and a lot of times get an MRI to assess for the ulnar collateral ligament.
What's your take on the downtime? Mm-hmm. You pull them out. How long is it worth the wait sometimes to say let's rest? That's the first trial, no doubt.
Yeah,
rest it.
For sure.
No doubt.
For
sure. So don't even worry about, I mean, saying, well, I could have been did this 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago.
I mean, the thing is,
you need to roll the dice on that first, right?
You can't speed up, you know, you can't speed up biology. You know, you just need time to rest, you know. So as long as it takes sometimes, and a lot of times you got to tell them, let pain be your guide. If you find a maneuver that you're doing or a throw that you're making from third base and it hurts you every time, it's like telling someone that has, you know, my head hurts, but I keep banging my head against the wall. Mm-hmm. You got to stop banging your head against the wall. It's not going to get better.
Right.
There is some truth to the old adage that time heals all wounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I guess it depends on when you catch them, because like we talked about half of those players will have a sudden onset, acute pop they feel. Except, you know, that type of player probably just needs to immediately come in for an evaluation. But those people that just sort of have some subtle, it's a little bit of a judgment call on you guys' part when you see them early. But if they just start with some subtle elbow pain, maybe a particular throw hurt them, but they finish the game, you know, you sort of vary that. Because you may not need to put them out for 3 months if you caught it early enough, you know. But it just depends on how they present. It's about half one way, half the other.
Right. I got you. Pretty good?
Yeah.
All right, so that is Dr. David Kusick, Dr. Michael Kusick, Dr. David Abbasi. Sorry, I apologize.
Sorry.
We got Jeff, what school are you at? Siena Plantation?
I'm at Ridgepoint.
Ridgepoint.
It's in Siena.
Jeff, you work for?
My name is Jeff Bertha. I'm a PAATC, and I actually work at UTMB.
And then Mark Dutrell?
Moffitt.
I swear you said something like that.
No, Mark Moffitt. I'm at Willow Ridge High School.
It's late today.
All right, Mark Moffitt, Willow Ridge High School. I know my name. I'm Jeremy Jackson.
There you go.
Host of the Sports Medicine Broadcast.
Are you sure about that?
I said that one enough. And then, of course, Jasmine Dozal, doing all the hard work here. So, ulnar collateral ligament, Memorial Hermann, sports medicine update. Thanks.
Thanks.